It's an odd number, but it's the right number.
Three of a perfect pair, as King Crimson said.
I didn't know they said that.
They did. It was the name of both a song and album.
I'm not much into King Crimson. Did you know one of the founding members went on to form Foreigner? Isn't that fucked up?
Oh, I did not know that. Who?
Robert Fripp.
Robert Fripp was definitely not in Foreigner.
I don't know.
More like Five Inner.
Oh, yeah. They're gross. That song, Hot Blooded, I don't care for that one. I don't like when he asks, baby, can you do more than dance? That's inappropriate. But yeah, he went from...
Oh, Ian McDonald.
Yeah. I don't know much about him. But I think, like, you know, a lot of prog people went on to do a bunch of bullshit in the 80s.
Yeah.
You didn't have a lot of choices. Your music suddenly wasn't cool anymore.
Of course, of the King Crimson original lineup, Robert Fripp is the one that's been the entire time. And so, Greg Lake went on to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
And then Asia, I think?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, see? Asia's all right. I give them a pass. They were a super group. It didn't have all the most super members of the group they came from, but typically I think that's how super groups tend to function.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. They're not like Chickenfoot.
Oh, yeah. Who was that? I remember that being a thing.
Buckethead, probably.
Buckethead, I don't think, was in Chickenfoot. I'd know that.
You know everything he's in?
I don't know everything he's in because he's like made 300 albums, like literally.
Okay.
But I know he was in Colonel Claypool's, what was it? Colonel Claypool's something Bucket Brain. I can't remember what it was called, but they did an album called The Great Eyeball in the Sky. The Big Eyeball in the Sky, which was rad. Colonel Claypool's Bucket of Bernie Brains, because it was Les Claypool, Buckethead, Bernie Worrell.
Yeah, I know
and,
him.
And Brain, who
yeah,
was...
Yeah, Bernie Worrell's like a funk guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chickenfoot, on the other hand, has Sammy Hagar.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Anthony, also of Van Halen.
Okay, yeah.
Joe Satriani on guitar, who I'm not really familiar with his work. I know he's like a... If you're like a guitar guy, you might like him. More of a Yngwie Malmsteen kind of fella. I like the way that sweet man shreds. But and then also drummer Chad Smith. Who the hell is Chad Smith?
Oh, wasn't he in the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
He was. That's the The very next line is due to his touring commitments with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Like, I think he might like be the all-time drummer of the band.
They got another guy who was a session musician for a bunch of people and also played for John Mellencamp and Dan Fogerty's backing bands. Not quite a super group at that point.
Another super group that Les Claypool was in would be Oysterhead, which was Les Claypool, of course, of Primus, Trey Anastasio of Phish, and Stuart Copeland of The Police, who was in another supergroup.
Oh, God.
Called Them Crooked Vultures.
Oh, yeah, with Josh Homme.
Josh Homme and...
I don't know.
No, wait.
Yes.
Nope, Stuart Copeland was not in that.
Okay, Stuart Copeland's dad was in the CIA and helped orchestrate, I think, the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, Them Crooked Vultures was Josh Homme, Dave Grohl, of course, of Nirvana and the Foo Fighters, and like a million other bands that he's played session work with, and John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin.
Also a jazz musician, Miles Copeland Jr., father of Stuart Copeland.
Oh, yeah. Stuart Copeland also did the soundtrack for Spyro the Dragon on PlayStation.
Terrible game.
Terrible game.
Do you like them? Do you like the Spyro?
I do like the Spyro. Well, okay, so I've never finished a Spyro game, so I guess that has to be taken into context. It's probably not fair for me to say that, like, they're great when I haven't actually finished one.
Copeland was definitely CIA, but I think I've slandered him. I believe it was Frank Zappa's father who was involved with orchestrating the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Everyone famous is related to someone who did something terrible during the 20th century.
I think a lot of terrible things happened in the 20th century.
Yeah, they wrote a whole song about it.
It's the end of the world as we know it?
No, the other one.
Oh, okay.
We didn't start the fire?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know how that one goes.
Yeah. It's basically the same song.
Miles Copeland playing jazz. Frank Zappa's dad is bad. You know how that goes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we didn't start the fire.
Nope, but we did start the Raincoat Report.
Yes.
Here with Boss and Jeremy.
Hello. And, you know, we've got a super group assembled this week in this week's film, I would say.
Yes, we do have leaders of an industry put together to create something that is perhaps worse than the sum of its parts. Because, of course, this is a creation by one of my favorite auteurs, Carlos Tobalina.
Yes.
Who is somebody that is, he's somebody who's successful in the sense that he made a bunch of movies, was financially successful enough to have his own production company, which, from what I understand, he was able to continue to make film movies into the late 80s because he had in-house production facilities, to develop and edit film and stuff like that.
Excellent.
So, I mean, regardless of what you say about the quality of his work, he was successful in what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's somebody who is able to take a bunch of valuable parts and make something out of them that perhaps is less less powerful than you would think on paper.
Yeah, he has a way of bringing us all back down to earth a bit, you know?
Yes. But this week we're talking about Undulations.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 1981 film centered around bringing two of the titans of the adult industry together, which in some way you could say was the basis around Mei-Lin versus Serena. But in this case, we're talking about bringing together John Holmes and Jamie Gillis.
Mm-hmm.
Two Raincoat Report favorites.
Yes, definitely.
And we also have a great supporting cast here, including Serena and Juliet Anderson, Billy Dee, John Martin, and several names that I'm less familiar with, and several people who are credited but don't appear in the film, including Herschel Savage.
You told me he wasn't in either of the films we covered.
He was not.
Okay.
He was just credited in this one.
He was hanging out in the back.
He was, yeah, he was eating crafty off screen.
Yeah, he was
eating little deli sandwiches.
He was pushing those little cuties oranges into the girls.
Oh, yeah.
Then juicing them.
Oh, yeah, that's how you make orange juice.
That's how you do it when you're on a budget and you're running the craft services.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's got to be an easier way.
There's got to be a better way.
But there wasn't. And there never will be. Just jam two or three of those up there and just mix them up yourself. And you just kind of squeeze the contents into a glass. And you pass that off to Jamie Gillis because he needs a bit of it's a little recharge after some of these scenes, you know. And just
you nice got to get glass. Your vitamin C.
Yeah, you got to get it all. And orange juice. It's a tasty way to do it, especially when it's made the way they used to make it, the way your grandmother used to make it.
And I forgot to mention, Malin is also in this.
Yes, as one of the two co-hosts of a popular late night show.
Yes, it's Malin along with...
Lisa B.
Yes, Lisa B. Wait.
Isn't it?
No? No, okay. Susanna French, who plays Georgia Drug.
Okay, she had a haircut that was similar to one I've seen.
Yes.
She has the same Lisa B haircut.
Yes, Lisa B is in next week's episode, not that you would know that.
You don't know we'll what I know. I have a whole week to catch up.
Susanna French is Georgia Drug, who co-hosts this show along with Malin. Their guest presenter is Maggie Miller, played by Kitty Shane.
Mm-hmm. The head of Male Watchers.
Yeah.
The president of Male, something like that.
But this lives in that same Carlos Tobalina universe where there's a lot of sex on television, which I appreciate. You know, that spawned things like the ending sequence of The Erotic Adventures of Casanova Part 2. And, of course, Jeremy's favorite, Pulsating Flesh.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
But yeah, that's really about it. This film talks about the sex lives of various people, including, but perhaps not featuring enough, of John Holmes and Jamie Gillis.
Yeah, they're there in a... They're there in a way.
They're there in a way. They eventually get involved, but it takes a while.
They're a nice dress setting.
Set dressing. Dress setting.
I would love some set dressing.
I do love my dressing.
Yeah. I wish it was Thanksgiving.
Well, one thing that you can say about Carlos Tobalina's work is I'm thankful for it. And it involves a lot of stuffing.
Oh, yeah.
So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about undulations.
Ugh.
Adult show of the year. Here comes Undulations with lovely hostesses Georgia Drug and Oriental beauty May Lin.
Hello, welcome to our program Undulations.
As you know, our program deals with people's sexual preferences.
And tonight we have something very special for you.
We have the two top male stars in explicit adult entertainment, Mr. Jamie Gillis.
Hi.
And Mr. John Holmes.
Thank you very much, Maylin. It's my pleasure to be here this evening.
And last but not least, we have the president of the International Male Watchers Society,
Ms. Maggie Miller. We have some very interesting questions to ask our guests tonight. But first, let's watch this.
Yeah. They're a monster.
Golan and Globus?
Yeah. They're one entity with two heads.
Oh, yeah.
And, it proves that two heads are better than one, because look at the films they produced.
I mean...
A lot of classics.
It's hard to go wrong with a Canon production.
Yeah.
They produced such great films as The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Life Force. And, what's the name of that movie? Tough Guys Don't Dance.
Yes.
And all those ninja movies and... There's a lot of good stuff.
Yes. I was thinking for some reason that Bo Derek film I had watched recently was produced by them, but it was not. It was someone else horrible.
Oh, I thought it was. That's a bummer.
They said it's, when I look it up, it says it's a Crackajack movie. But yeah, the Golan Globus. Other big entertainment news. Neil Young found out that I was using this podcast to broadcast my own interpretations of his songs over Spotify, and he released a statement about it saying that he was coming back to put a stop to that. So we did it. We got him back.
We really did it.
Yeah. Us alone. I alone. Like live. Yeah, we're going to talk about
okay,
yeah.
So, okay.
What are we doing?
Bolero, okay. The film that Bo Derek made before Ghosts...
Can't Do It,
was released by Canon.
Okay, I haven't got around to Bolero yet. I was so dispirited after Ghosts Can't Do It that I just don't think that I could watch another movie made by the same people.
Okay, fair enough.
It'll take a while. It's like when you watch like a Neil Breen film.
Okay,
and you want to like have like a couple months before you watch the next one because it's going to be just some sort of inane, asinine insanity.
Yeah, something pretending to be very profound but using a lot of stock footage and green screens.
Yeah.
And people playing multiple characters.
Yeah.
Particularly himself.
Less so with the... what is his fucking name? Jim Derek?
John Derek.
John. Less so with John Derek, more just it feels like a man who never talked to another human writing like a romance film, which is something that's kinda hard to like a romantic comedy, I guess, which is something that's probably impossible to do if you never interacted with another human. You wouldn't even begin to know what that looks like. And that's the result of, at least Ghosts Can't Do It. But what about the results of the film we've gathered here today to talk about, Angoulême?
We open on the San Francisco coast at sunset, but quickly cut to some sex,
yes.
Stylized in like a negative sepia situation.
The image of the San Francisco coast is similar at first. It's quite red. Originally, so I wrote Red at Night, Tobolina's Delight.
So we get our cast credits over some sex. We can't really tell who it is, but ultimately it's Jamie Gillis. On screen, we get some text to say, some people have it made. We see Jamie Gillis there fucking Serena and Jennifer Duran as they're side by side in doggy position. Jamie's fucking Serena at first as Jennifer kisses her face. Then Jennifer lays on her side and Jamie fucks her from behind, spooning her as she fingers Serena. Serena gets up and licks Jamie's balls and Jennifer's clit as they bang away. And then Jamie fucks Jennifer in a prone doggy position, holding her wrists behind her back and pulling her hair. Then we cut to him pulling out and coming on Jennifer's ass and Serena's face. Serena licks and sucks Jamie's cock more. Then we get on-screen text that says, while others watch TV. So we see a woman sit down and turn on the TV, and then a man sit down and turn on the TV. I thought that this was the setup for a plot. Mm-hmm. And like, even... We'll get to it. We'll get to it at the end.
Get to it.
I expected something more. But in classic Tobolina fashion, it wasn't there.
Oh.
So, we then see the top-rated adult show on television, Undulations, hosted by May Lin and Georgia Drug.
The Oriental Beauty May Lin.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they refer to her that specifically.
Right. Our hostesses inform us that the show deals with people's sexual preferences, and we're introduced to the top two male stars in adult entertainment today, Jamie Gillis and John Holmes. We're also introduced to the president of the International Male Watchers Society.
Maggie Miller.
Miss Maggie Miller, Kitty Shane, yes. So our hosts then say, first, watch this. What an intro.
Yeah. Just smash to it. And what do we got?
We have a San Francisco Pride Parade.
Oh, we sure do.
Like a minute of footage of a bunch of happy gentlemen dancing around and having fun. Lots of people dressed in drag and having a good old time marching the streets.
After the kind of lackluster sex scene opening, I was sort of excited about this. I was like, is this going to be like a Carlos Tobolina Mondo film?
Yeah, or like, I wonder if he's got some like permit-less footage of his actors at a parade or something.
Right.
But... like freaking Larry Cohen would have done.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's just some footage inserted here, and then it ends.
Yeah, it's just sort of without it's presented without context, quite literally.
Well, it's given slight context at the end, but it doesn't make any sense.
No, at first he's like, here, watch this, and yes. Then...
we're told that these days, homosexuals are more outspoken than ever, but, as we're told, women have a more legitimate cause. I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure. I know women's lib was... a thing at the time, but that sure. doesn't really necessarily seem to be what they're on about.
Right, and it's also like one doesn't take away from the other or anything. I don't think
you might be asking a lot of 1981 Carlos Tobelina.
Sure.
But yeah, I would agree with you.
Georgia tells us about her friend who has a striking resemblance to a movie star and has an insatiable appetite for sex. So then we cut to a scene where Georgia is laying in bed with her friend, Brooke West, who I believe is thought to look like Marilyn Monroe.
Okay.
I think that's what they said about her having a resemblance to a movie star.
There are a lot of movie stars. Maybe they meant Barbara Streisand.
She did not look like Barbara Streisand.
Does she look like Marilyn Monroe?
A little bit. Brooke talks about how she's cold and horny. The ladies get an idea to solve this issue, and so Georgia tosses aside her robe, and Brooke begins to go down on her, licking and fingering her clit. We get some kaleidoscoping shots of the women, as Brooke licks and sucks Georgia's nipple for a bit, and we get the sounds of moans that no one on screen is making. Brooke lays back and Georgia licks down her chest and down to her vagina, where Georgia licks and fingers Brooke's clit. This goes on for a couple of minutes, and Brooke seems to really enjoy herself. After a bit, Brooke moans that she wants a real cock. Georgia produces a dildo, but Brooke tells her no. She wants something big and real.
Oh.
Georgia asks who it can get at this point, and Brooke says she knows just who to call. Georgia asks if he has a big cock, and Brooke says, the biggest.
Oh boy, here he comes.
So Brooke calls the mystery man, and he seems to tell her he's on the way, based on what we hear from her side of the conversation. After Brooke hangs up, Georgia asks who he is, and Brooke tells her that he's the best cock in town. We cut to the TV studio where Georgia's telling the story, and says that, that brings her to when she first met Jamie.
What?
Yeah, you would think that if they were talking about the biggest cock,
yeah,
considering the two people they had on hand,
yeah,
it might have been John Holmes.
He effectively faked us out.
Yes.
He did it. He tricked us.
But, you know, Jamie Gillis has a big cock, and he's quite the cocksman.
Yeah, no one would... I think he's definitely more of a showman than John Holmes.
Sure.
I think he puts more into his performance.
Yes.
As a cocksman, as you said. He doesn't have the 14-inch advantage, you know?
Yeah, John Holmes can rest on his laurels, so to speak,
he does not get up.
Yeah. Yeah, he's resting so much that he barely gets up.
Yeah.
So we cut back to the bedroom, and Brooke answers the door, letting in Jamie Gillis. Introducing Jamie to Georgia, Brooke calls Georgia Susan, which is her other porn name is Suzanne French. So, whatever.
Okay.
Georgia is shocked that it's Jamie Gillis, and she tells him that she's seen all his movies.
Yeah, she's like, what does she say? I have it. She's like, Jamie Gillis, is it really you?
Yeah.
It warmed my heart.
The ladies offer him something to drink or smoke, but he just needs a menage a trois. So the ladies start to undress and caress, and Jamie notes to Georgia that they haven't made love before and tells her that he wants to make sure to do what she likes. She tells him he can do anything to her, as does Brooke. So Jamie undresses and crawls into bed with the ladies, lying down in the middle as Georgia kisses him and Brooke fondles his cock. Georgia kisses down Jamie's chest and gets to his cock, which he starts sucking. Brooke takes some turns as well as the ladies swap and lick his shaft together. Jamie fingers Georgia as Brooke is blowing him, then Brooke straddles his face so that he can eat her out. After a bit of this, Georgia starts to 69 Jamie as Brooke plays with his balls and strokes his shaft a bit. Brooke blows him more as Georgia sits upright and gets more oral pleasure from below. Brooke gets up and mounts Jamie cowgirl. The ladies make out as they ride Jamie's face and cock. This continues for a few minutes, and the ladies seem to greatly enjoy themselves. Georgia dismounts and Jamie pumps into Brooke hard, and she collapses onto him, and they rest a moment. Brooke asks, isn't he the best? And Georgia notes, she hasn't gotten to fuck him yet. Jamie invites her to climb aboard, and indeed she does.
Excellent.
Georgia rides Jamie's cock as Brooke watches and rubs Georgia's ass and plays with Jamie's balls. After a couple of minutes of this, Jamie pulls out and strokes his cock, finishing on her ass before stuffing it inside her again. We cut back to the TV studio where May Lynn asks John Holmes how he feels about women asking him about sexual preferences, which is a weird question.
I have a question.
Sure.
Who is filming that?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're supposed to be led to believe that this is a visualization of Georgia telling a story, but seemingly... The viewers at home saw this, so I don't know.
I don't know.
Unless the viewers at home only saw them talking, and we, the movie audience, are the only ones who saw the sex scene.
It seems crazy to think about. There's some structural issues here.
John tells May Lynn that communication is important during sex, and he prefers for a woman to let him know what pleases her.
I don't believe that for a second about John Holmes.
If she isn't enjoying herself, he'll stop and talk to her about it.
No. Probably not.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
He's then asked what he does for entertainment after work, and John rambles about being a sexual athlete and circles back around to saying that he likes to have sex outside of work to sharpen his skills.
It's like going to the batting cages.
Yeah.
Or something. It's like spring training.
May Lynn tells us that sometimes men take advantage of women seeking employment. Georgia asks, how might it be if things were different? See this. And we cut away.
I like how, like, peeled out her forward stare is when she introduces things. She's just very glassy-eyed. She's like, now this.
Yeah.
And then on to the next clip. What do we got?
Well, we cut to a scene where Lenny Williams, played by Billy Dee, walks in, telling a woman sitting at a desk, played by Juliet Anderson, that he's looking for a job. She talks about a foreman job that he says that he has the experience for. Juliet tells Lenny he'll need to take an aptitude test. She notes, however, that he's very attractive, and that she wants to have sex with him. Lenny says that's fine with him. Juliet picks up the phone and tells Amy on the other end to hold all her calls. She doesn't want to be interrupted, and it'll be a while. So, just as a note here.
Yes.
Beginning of this scene, the introduction was basically, what if women took advantage of men in situations where they wanted jobs?
Right. But the answer is men are just into it.
Yeah.
It's actually just fine.
Yeah. So Juliet sits down in front of Lenny and says, let's see what your attributes are. She pulls down his pants and claims, I knew it. I suppose indicating that she knew he had a big hog. Juliet sucks and strokes Lenny's cock, taking it all the way down her throat. She licks Lenny's balls and strokes his cock more as Lenny undresses the rest of the way. We get some cutaways during this and other scenes of the people watching at home.
Yeah.
And we see the woman watching at home with her mouth agape as she's watching this.
There's a man as well who stands in for the viewer and us more broadly, who's just sitting around in his own filth as he watches undulations.
Juliet takes off her top and props her leg up on the back of the couch, pulling her dress up and her panties aside so that Lenny can lick and finger her pussy. After a bit of this, Lenny fucks her doggy style on the couch, standing behind her as she's bent over. We get a minute or two of this, and then Lenny yells that he's coming and pulls out and comes on Juliet's ass. We cut back to the TV studio. Georgia says, "In an intimate situation, men let ladies know just what to do to pleasure themselves." She asks, "What if things were different?"
Now this.
What? So we cut to a antique slash junk store where a man, played by Eric Stein, is looking around. The woman at the register is Eva Hausman. Eric asks Eva how much a painting there is. It's $25. He tells her that he doesn't have $25.
Maybe you would like to pay a different fee.
Yes, with her German accent.
Yeah.
So she takes Eric into another room with a couch. He asks about her accent, which she clarifies is German.
Yeah, she says that her father had come here.
Yes.
When?
Was it perhaps in the mid to late 40s?
I think it's a good possibility. I think maybe a little bit. Definitely on the later side of the 40s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She asks what he has for her, and he gestures to his pants to make sure, and indeed, that's what she wants. So Eric unveils his cock, and she gets a good hold of it for a moment, as the viewers at home we see watch on. Eric finishes undressing, as does Eva. They make out a bit and fondle each other's genitals. Eva leans down and starts to stroke and suck Eric's cock. After a moment, we see Eva mount Eric in a sitting reverse cowgirl position, bouncing up and down on his cock. Eva rides Eric for a couple of minutes in this position, then rotates into a cowgirl position, kneeling on the couch. Eric lays the rest of the way back on the couch as Eva rides him more. Eva then lays back, and Eric fucks her missionary. After a bit of this, Eric pulls out and comes all over Eva's pubes and stomach. Eva says Eric can have the picture now, but Eric tells her he doesn't want the picture, he just wants her. Then we cut back to the TV studio. Maylin asks Maggie what she thinks about male prostitutes. Maggie says she thinks it's great. She has a black book at home and she has no problem calling someone who might be up for it. John says that he thinks all women would want that, and asks Maggie if she's ever paid someone to have sex for the first time. Maggie tells him she has a friend who did. John tells her he'd like to hear about that. So we cut away again, this time to Jerry, played by John Martin, with a woman played by Stephanie Bonds. I don't think that there was an exchange of money in this scene.
No, there's no discussion of cash or money, any sort of exchange for sex.
Excellent. So they walk over and sit onto a bed together, with the shot seemingly showing the edge of the set. Stephanie asks Jerry about the baby that he had recently, and then asks him about Bridget, apparently his wife and mother of the child.
Yeah, the arrangement they have is quite a different setup, unless she was paid to do this, but that does not
perhaps
come, that doesn't come in.
So, yeah, we get more clarity as it goes on. Jerry says Bridget's okay, but adds that he can't have sex with her for 6 weeks after she had the baby. Stephanie says that she heard about that, and Bridget suggested that Stephanie might be able to help Jerry with his problem. Jerry's hesitant when he hears about this, but Stephanie adds, "There's nothing wrong with it. It's not behind Bridget's back, after all. It was her idea." So Stephanie and Jerry tell each other that they like each other a lot. And Stephanie says, "When people haven't made love before, it can be awkward figuring out what each other likes." So she suggests that she can tell him what she likes. She shows him her breasts and tells him she likes them to be touched. Then she tells him to eat her pussy. And he does. Stephanie asks Jerry if he does that to Bridget a lot, and he confirms he does. They shift positions, and Jerry continues to go down on her. "That pussy's so wet," he says. "You made it that way," she says. After a bit more of this, Stephanie asks if Jerry's ready to fuck her, and he tells her yes. So he undresses and produces his rod. Stephanie tells him to fuck her mouth first. She sucks his cock, and he thrusts into her mouth as well for a bit. Stephanie then says that she wants him to fuck her. They undress, and then Stephanie lays back on the bed, and Jerry pushes his cock inside her and starts to fuck her. Stephanie squeezes her breast hard and licks her own nipple for a bit as Jerry lays pipe. The audience at home is delighted, as we see.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry fucks her a bit more and then pulls out to coat Stephanie in his cum. She licks and sucks his cock a bit more. Jerry says at this rate he'll have to have a kid every year. Stephanie tells him she's happy to help him whenever he needs it.
Oh.
And that's why people have so many kids.
Yeah. Because of arrangements like this.
Yes.
Because of... I don't know why else people have kids. Economic pressures?
Yes. Lack of access to family planning.
You want a kid to have... because we're bringing back child labor. You want to have kids now. Those kids are bank. They're untapped potential until they're about like six. And then you just get them big and strong. You send them off to the factories.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure to have a lot of kids now. If you want to get rich quick. It's not quite quick, though. Because it takes a lot of time and investment to raise a child. Even to the age of six. Especially if you're going to get them strong. I don't know.
You want them big and strong so that they can push a plow.
Yeah, they need to push a plow, or I don't know. I was just imagining them just pushing boulders around.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. Down to a pit to clear all the boulders out of the way, I guess.
Those are the sorts of jobs that need filling these days.
Yeah. You've been out lately, there's boulders strewn all over the roads.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get anywhere.
That's why you were so late getting here today.
Yeah, I had a big boulder fell on the road, and I had to cut across the grass on the interstate. Me and a whole bunch of people.
There was a big, strong boy to push it out of the road.
Yeah, there wasn't, though, because...
He's still getting big and strong.
He's still getting big and strong, and they took that job from him, so we have to legislate it back that he can have it again.
Yeah, they gave his job to AI.
Yeah, and AI is not strong enough to push a rock.
Not yet.
It never will be. It's just a computer. I don't even know if it's a computer.
So we cut back to the TV studio. Maylin asks what turns each of her co-hosts on. Maylin herself says a sexy movie turns her on. Maggie says male dancers in a nightclub. Georgia loves open and sensuous people. Jamie says he jerks off to John Holmes movies.
That's cool, Jamie.
And John says that he likes small, very feminine women.
There's one other thing he likes as well.
Yes. And also this, he says, as he pulls out a tiny jar that appears to be full of Coke.
Yes.
And does like a key bump off out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Maggie asks if that's what she thinks it is. And John says, just to call it rapé. They pass it around, and everyone does a bump except for Jamie, who passes.
Yeah. He has to maintain his virtuous image, he says.
In honor of Women's Lib, the gentlemen decide to let the women lead the way. So the women start to undress. I believe it's Georgia who makes a joke about them being on pubic television.
Yep.
Maylin and Maggie go over to see Jamie while Georgia joins John. Georgia straddles John's lap as Maylin and Maggie take turns sucking Jamie's cock. Georgia sits on the back of a chair and John goes down on her for a bit. Malin stands up and takes off her panties, and Jamie fingers her a bit before she sits back onto Jamie's cock, riding him and sitting reverse cowgirl, as Maggie fingers her and she licks Maggie's breasts. John is going down on Georgia for a bit here as Jamie starts to fuck Malin doggy style on the leather couch as Maggie rubs her back and makes out with her. After a couple minutes of this, Maggie lays back on the couch and Jamie starts to fuck her there as John sucks on Georgia's breasts a bit and then has her start sucking on his cock. Georgia lays on the back of the chair and John props her legs up on his shoulders and he stands and fucks her. Jamie continues to pound out Maggie and Maylin lays back and masturbates. Jamie fucks Maggie doggy style. We see the guy watching at home twitching and crossing his eyes.
Yeah, it's one of his special talents. That's how he's undulating. He is undulating, exactly.
The woman at home says, "Wow." John continues to fuck Georgia as she plays with her clit. Jamie's still fucking Maggie doggy style. Georgia licks and sucks John's cock more. Jamie's fucking Maggie in a prone position on the couch before pulling out and coming on her ass. John's cock is in Georgia's mouth and he's stroking it. He pulls out of her mouth and comes on her face and breasts. We zoom out of the TV and hear an announcer tell us that that's the end of the broadcast. And he says to stick around for a commercial announcement, which leads both the man and the woman watching TV at home to emphatically turn the TV off in disgust.
Yeah.
And they stand up and leave the room. We freeze frame on the woman walking away and get our end credits. So I thought something else was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this man and the woman were in the same house.
Yeah.
And at the end of the show, they were going to come together. And even if they didn't have a sex scene, we were going to get the indication that these people perhaps were in a strained relationship. But after watching Undulations on TV, they were going to get together and communicate about sex and live happily ever after.
No, they're just two random people watching it at home.
Yeah, and they get mad whenever commercials come on and turn off the TV.
Yeah, you don't want to follow Undulations time spot.
Yeah.
It's popular, but, like, it doesn't have, like, a good, you know, like, they say, like, what determines, like, a show's success is, like...
The lead-in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just probably a little too late after Undulations goes off.
Yeah, it's like when the late-night shows go off.
Right. You can't do much. You're going to lose them.
I mean, unless the next show is Pulsating Flesh.
Yeah.
Perhaps it would have... that would have gotten a good audience retention.
That was kind of a... spinoff of Undulations.
Yeah,
they it's like one of those like sister shows, like a Dr. Phil to like an Oprah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Undulations.
My new shoes are falling apart.
That's not good.
No, you know what could help that?
What's that?
If our dear listeners spent $5 a month and went to patreon.com/raincoatreport.
Yes, we'll be back this week.
Yes,
to talk about movies of various types.
Yeah,
on a return to our 42nd Street Dive series that we've been doing rather infrequently.
But, I'm taking a look at the newest and greatest Marvel hit,
and I'll be talking about whatever bullshit I've been watching lately.
Yeah,
and it'll be a good time. And, of course, that's also when our drinking hits its high point, which is always fun.
Yeah, we get turned out and we get loose. But your $5 a month will keep me in shoe leather and brown.
Yes, and I don't know. Maybe we'll drink schnapps. No promises.
No promises at all. You can drink schnapps.
We've still got 5 little bottles of schnapps over there.
It's like an Agatha Christie novel. 5 little schnapps.
And then there were 5.
Yeah, and we drank them.
All right.
We did it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're not supposed to spoil that. You're supposed to get them to listen to Patreon to figure out who did it.
They're going to listen
to Patreon. Who drank all the schnapps.
They're going to listen to Patreon out of a sense of Christian charity.
basically it's the offering plate that we're passing around.
Yeah. Please give. A boy like me needs shoes.
Did you say those were new shoes that are falling apart?
Yes, I've been wearing them for a week.
Oh, that's not good.
They don't make them to last anymore.
How much did you spend on these shoes?
I don't know. I've had them since Christmas. I just started wearing them.
Oh, okay. So
they're Christmas shoes, so I think elves made them.
Oh, well, that's why. They don't have the same craftsmanship that they used to.
Like, they don't have the same craftsmanship as, like, a Chinese boy.
Well, exactly, yeah. These days, everything got woke, and Santa can't beat the elves anymore like Chinese children get beat.
Yeah, they've got the elves unionized, and because of that, Santa can't afford presents this year, kids.
Not ones that don't fall apart in a week.
Yeah, but,
I guess with that, that's as good a time as any for us to take a break.
Yeah, we're going to undulate our way out of here, and we'll be back with our final thoughts.
And our final undulations.
Yeah. Like dying shakes.
Or death rattles.
Yeah.
And you, Mr. Holmes, how do you feel about women asking you about their sexual preferences? How do you feel about that?
Sex on any level, whether it's casual or a serious relationship, is impossible if you don't have a communication between the two people. Otherwise, it's basically, it's like masturbating with a skin-covered container or just masturbation with someone. You have to have communication. I don't mind. As a matter of fact, I insist on her letting me know what pleases her.
You like to please the lady?
I'm there to please her, but also to please myself. And it pleases me when she is enjoying herself. It's a two-way thing, totally. If she isn't enjoying herself, I'll stop and talk to her. And if I can't reason with her or get a communication going with her, then I'd rather just go out and have go to a baseball game or something.
Stained. He started releasing country albums and stuff eventually.
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes sense. Yeah. I've not followed the Aaron Lewis discography very closely.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't think you're missing much. Even those Stained albums, I think you could probably get by without them.
Yeah. I just remember the first couple because they were popular when I was young.
Yeah. I remember buying one of their CDs, even though I didn't like them very much, but my mom liked them. But then I remember listening to it, and I was like, this shit's really whiny. And that was from, like, a 13-year-old who was listening to, like, Korn and related acts. So that's quite a condemnation.
You were invested in the genre, so to speak.
Yeah, I wanted more stuff at the time, like a Rob Zombie. I wanted people that were digging through ditches and burning witches. That's not what Stained were all about.
No, they weren't.
They were about having some real serious feelings. Yeah. And later on about how, what happened to the real America? Can't a white boy just go to the city without getting stabbed? And so forth.
Is that something that was in a later song?
No, I think that might just be a country boy can survive. Or
oh.
Part of the plot to M. Night Shyamalan's The Village.
Okay.
That happened in that. That's why they all went to the village, because some guy got stabbed and they're like, we can't live in these cities with our children anymore. Sorry to spoil that 22-year-old film.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. There was no real threat of me going to watch it.
And there were no real threat of pig monsters, despite what the village elders claimed. But,
well,
there
is a threat of one thing, that's for sure, and that's
the raincoat review.
It's here like a plague. it's more of a chronic disease. Can't get rid of it. It's like my asthma.
Yeah, it's bound to be here about weekly.
It's taking
perhaps less often if somebody has to work a Saturday.
And my grandpa died.
Oh,
it's been a long month. Plus, I'm broke again because I finally accepted that society wasn't going to collapse. So I started paying my debts.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, I'm trying to clear my credit, so maybe one day when I'm like 55, I can own a house and then die in 5 years.
I think you're better off just waiting for your parents to expire.
I mean, that can happen.
And inheriting their house.
I've lived in that house so long, though. I don't want to. I gotta get out of there.
I understand that. I'm glad that I bought my house when I did, even though I felt like kind of forced into it.
Yeah, you got it like right before everything kind of like went tits up again, I think.
Yeah.
As far as like everyone I know who's bought a house recently is like, if they're like, if I miss a couple of days of work, I won't be able to pay my mortgage and the bank will be here. And I'm like, oh.
They'll be waiting outside when I get home.
Yeah. They're out. They're already taking my stuff. They're just collecting like all my lawn ornaments and
my mail out of my mailbox.
Yeah. They're taking the mailbox actually. But I guess not all that's neither here nor there when it comes to
the raincoat review.
We went so long that I felt that I needed to introduce it again.
Fair enough.
Well, it's certainly a Carlos Topolino film.
Sure is.
We've seen a bunch of them now. I've got a bit of a scale for ranking them.
Sure.
This one, I would say, is definitely a lesser effort compared to a lot of the ones we've covered.
Sure.
And even, I think, a lesser effort than the one that I consider this kind of a prototype almost of Pulsating Flesh.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's done a couple other films that are also like on a television, but
I'm sure we'll get to them soon enough.
Those are the two we've covered. And that one, baffling as it is and occasionally dull to watch, has a lot more charm to it than this.
Yeah, I could see that.
There's a, that one at least has like the story of a man with the power of super sperms.
Yes.
And water beds.
Yes.
And little zap sounds every time someone comes.
Oh, yeah.
And of course.
Wow, look at those tits.
Oh, yeah, the milkman.
I always think fondly of that film, but I'll never give it more than like a 2.5 just because it's boring. Even though I think highly of it. You can think highly of something that's boring, like like school.
Sure.
You know? But yeah. All that is to say, this one does just kind of feel, like you said, it's a lot less than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
Everything here feels kind of cobbled together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain some of these scenes are cut from other features.
Look at this.
Loops. Yeah. Look at this. It's funny, though. It's funny in like that drugged out, confused Carlos Topolino way.
Yeah.
Where nothing quite matches reality. And it's a, I do like this. I like the setup of it as a, the general idea, but once again, the execution of it leaves a lot to be desired. I think ultimately, there are probably half a dozen other Carlos Topolino films I would recommend above this one.
Sure.
And, that is also to say, this is also another peek into the mind of a singular man, his obsession with orgies.
Yes.
This one does have like a very loose, probably like improvised feel to like the dialogue. I'm sure there was not a lot written.
Mm-hmm.
And can we even be sure that old John even was supposed to bring out that cocaine?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, I don't know. Maybe
he didn't know the cameras were running at that point.
Yeah, that's why Jamie refused. He's like, I'm not going to do a crime on screen.
It's bad enough that I'm kind of doing something illegal on screen anyway.
It's bad enough that I'm actually just a criminal.
Right.
They don't need to see any evidence of it. But I don't know. Beyond like those like basic like charms of the Topolino style, there's not a whole lot here for me. I think I would ultimately give it 2 stars. I don't see myself returning to it, even in a particularly like nostalgic way, like the way I view Pulsating Flesh. But I probably never thought I would feel that way about that one, so I guess we'll see.
It's aged over time like a fine wine with you, I think.
Yeah. Time makes fools of us all, I think, is really what I go for.
Here's what I'll say about Undulations. The concept on paper is certainly better than the result. The idea of, okay, we're going to frame this as a bunch of sex scenes framed by a television show about sex, and it's going to star John Holmes and Jamie Gillis in the roles of the two biggest stars of the sex industry, which, as far as male stars are concerned, at the time of 1981, they certainly both had claims to that, so that's cool in that way. But at the end of the day, first off, John Holmes, like, barely showed up to work. Like, he appears in the talking segments, and he has sex in one sex scene at the end. But even in that scene, it seems like he's just kind of being lazy, because Jamie Gillis is plowing two chicks and going back and forth between them and really railing them. And John Holmes spends half the scene going down on his lady, which, not that there's anything wrong with going down on a lady, but it also seemed like he was, like, not trying that hard. Then he gets blown for most of the scene and does very little fucking. Jamie Gillis was in three sex scenes in the film and certainly seemed to be putting forth his full effort.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, John Holmes did a bunch of coke on screen.
Yeah.
And Jamie Gillis did not. So perhaps that's part of it. So as much as I enjoy John Holmes and Jamie Gillis, I feel like this film underutilized both of them, despite the fact that Jamie did more. I will say that the sex scenes, I think, were above the median of Carlos Tobalina sex scenes, just sex content-wise.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say they were as good as something like Maylin versus Serena, because I thought those were, like, quite excellent.
They don't ever end up in a tub of pink goo.
No. These were decent, I would say. Whereas in some Carlos Tobalina films, I find the sex scenes to be, like, boring.
Sure.
I would say that they weren't in this, but at the same time, just the film itself is just a mishmash of things pushed together that don't totally work. There's a lot of logical jumps here. But, you know, at the same time, I like the concept of it, even if it's certainly not living up to the full potential of the concept. I think it's interesting that the idea of it is to talk about people having frank conversations about sex and what they like.
Right.
But the execution of it is so poor that only sort of comes along. It does occur during the sex scenes, kind of, and they talk about it explicitly on the show, but it just doesn't mash together well.
I like how every clip they set up doesn't demonstrate what they're talking about.
They do a little bit. Like, during the sex scene with Jamie Gillis, he stops and asks Georgia about... we haven't had sex before. I want to make sure I do what you want to do.
Right. But that was maybe the one sex scene that was probably filmed for this film.
Probably, yes.
Of, like, two or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, we don't know who filmed that one.
I mean, that's fair.
That was being told in a story.
Right.
They might have left that out in their version of the story. Maybe we, the viewer... just hope that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, and also the scene with the woman who's trying to hire Billy D or whatever.
I just feel like that's not a good illustration, though, because there's no difference, ultimately. I don't know.
She tells him that she's going to tell him what she likes. Specifically early in the sex scene.
Are you trying to edge your way to giving this one a 5?
I'm trying to edge most of the show, or most of the time we're recording a show.
Oh, yeah.
But, no. All of that's to say that there were notes of a concept here.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't, fall together. And if there was more effort put into, communicating these ideas, there was an opportunity for this to stand above what it is. But it doesn't, so it doesn't.
I think Carlos Tobelina and the Mitchell brothers should have got together later in the 80s to make the first safe sex, pro talking about consent film, porn film.
That would have been interesting.
It would have been, I guess it would have been, I don't know. It's like an instructional film. Didn't like Madonna do something like that? Didn't she make like a safe sex tape?
I don't know. That sounds like something that might have happened based on the time frame and the sort of stuff Madonna was doing at the time.
Well, if you know anything about that, send us a tip.
So here's what I'll say. I think that my life's work, my life's most important work,
yeah,
is going through and understanding and discussing the films of Carlos Tobelina.
Yeah.
You know, the work of Jess Franco, I think, is
it's pretty better. Well covered.
It is, well, yes, it's more well covered, certainly, even just by Stephen Thrower, but also there are other people who have like written books about his work and stuff. Carlos Tobelina, I mean, there are people who have studied his work a bit, but it's a little bit more underground. And obviously, I think Jess Franco has... There's a better argument to make of his work being a bit more artistic, even if it is full of holes.
Yeah,
it sure certainly is full of holes. Yeah. And certainly Carlos Tobelina's work is full of holes. In fact, more holes. But I don't know. I think every time I watch a Carlos Tobelina film, I feel something special inside me, even if at the end of the day, the film isn't that great. So all of that's to say I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
Excellent. I'm glad you felt something special.
Yeah, I think that the work of Carlos Tobelina is an important part of this podcast, and that's a good thing because of all of the Carlos Tobelina movies I bought on DVD during that last Vinegar Syndrome sale.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have plenty to cover. But we'll try to space those out a little bit so we don't get Tobelina fatigue and get driven completely fucking mad.
I don't know. Maybe we should just do them all at once.
Maybe for episode 200, we'll just watch all of them and review them all in the same episode.
We should put them all up on one screen. Just watch them all concurrently.
Oh, man.
That would be... truly pulsating flesh.
Yes. So follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Raincoat Report, raincoatreport@gmail.com, patreon.com/raincoatreport. We already explained the importance of that. Jeremy needs shoes.
I need shoes. I need gas money. I could, if you want to buy me a sandwich, dig deep.
Yes.
I'm in dire need. But I guess that's all I gotta really say this week, but except for one last piece of advice. If you're gonna form a super group, don't forget your raincoat.
This brings our program to an end. Thank you for watching. And now we request your attention for a very important commercial message.